Today's sponsor is Home Theater Solutions. Absolutely love these guys. HTS is your local technology expert, serving Delaware for 16 years. Home Theater Solutions specializes in TV installations, home automations, Sonos audio systems, security cameras, and Wi-Fi networks. For all of your home and business tech needs, give them a call, 1-800-690-2029, or visit htsav.net. All right, good morning. Welcome back. This is the Rehoboth Social Podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. I'm almost ready to change that. Local folks. It's kind of a funny, doesn't fit my persona, but it does rhyme, and I like it, and I guess I'll stick with it. Good morning. How are you?
I am good.
So introduce yourself.
So my name is Laura Bardis, and I am the Director of Communications and Engagement for Children and Families First.
Ah, I love that. So we were talking. This is what happens a lot. I meet people, start talking, and then the next thing I know, I'm like, hey, you want to come on my podcast? And they're like, yeah. And then this morning I wake up, I'm like, what are we talking about? So I'm glad now I remember.
Right.
When we started talking about Families First, which is actually... You know, it's a great subject. When we sat down, and I just have to talk about this a little bit. I watched that movie CODA, and it's on Apple TV. And CODA stands for Children of Deaf Adults.
Okay.
Children of Deaf Adults. And it's on Apple TV, and it is a freaking game changer. Well, that's kind of weird. It's not a game changer, but it really...
Eye-opener.
It was an eye-opener. It opened up my heart. It's such a sweet movie. I don't want to give it away, but it's a daughter who has a parents and a brother that are all deaf, and she and just her life and the mechanics of that, you know, that situation, and
she's the only one who has hearing capacity.
She's the only one that has hearing capacity, and she wants to be a singer, and she sings amazing, and it's just an amazing movie. And we watched it not last night, but the night before, and I swear to God, I cried like 5 times. And, you know, you and I had talked about just kind of coming out of... What's that?
I have much to say about that.
Well, and, you know, our conversation was about how we've kind of come out of COVID. And somebody just asked me this yesterday. A client asked me this yesterday. Do you feel like COVID screwed up a lot of people? Mm. And I'm like, yeah. And I may be one of them. And I felt like watching that movie, I was on the edge of bursting into tears for like 2 hours.
Right.
And I would start crying, and I'm like, maybe this is from like 2 years of a pandemic. It's all just coming out through this movie. I don't know what it was, but I think you're right. I believe that we are like in post-traumatic stress disorder.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many of us that have simply been lauded and celebrated for our adaptability, for our resilience. Whether you are a parent, you know, and you had to figure out how to handle remote schooling all of a sudden with your kids, or whether you were an essential worker and you were the one who had to be on the front lines this whole time, or if all of a sudden, you know, similar to myself, like your office shut down and your entire career was based on being out, being the talker, the communicator, the engager. And you had to lock yourself behind closed doors and only connect with people on a screen for 2 years. And we celebrated each other for doing that and for rising to that occasion.
Yep.
But no one has started talking, or at least talking enough yet, about the reality that that was traumatizing.
Well, it was traumatizing.
Absolutely traumatizing.
And it was a slow traumatizing, right? We didn't...
Right. Extended toxic stress.
Yeah. Extended toxic stress. That's
we know there is
XTC.
There's years and years and years of research on adverse childhood experiences that show us extended toxic stress affects well-being, health, mobility, stability, development, engagement, speech, language, all of it.
Yeah.
So now we have an entire nation full of people who for 2 years have endured extended toxic stress. And I mean, I only speak for myself on this one. It almost feels like everyone's like, okay, we flipped the light switch. COVID's over. Go about your day.
Right. And it's actually kind of this war.
Right.
the war kind of
and then
put it on the back burner.
As an individual, find yourself watching a movie and in your own head going, okay, I mean, I know this movie is emotional. However, right. on an everyday basis, I would not have hysterically broken down five times. Yet, it clearly needs to come out somewhere.
Well, so what was our worry? I mean, I think probably the first one was maybe dying.
Yep.
And then maybe two was our family. And then three, I think we really, maybe not all of us, some of us, you know, came out a little better than others, but we took a real hard look at our participation in a career. And I was I was saying this to someone yesterday. I go, you know, I remember when they announced the businesses that were going to be allowed to stay open and the businesses that weren't.
Right.
And on the first pass of that, the salon business was on that list of essential workers. And I thought, yes, right.
I have value.
Yes. And then, like, 2 days later, it was off the list. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, oh, no. What are we going to do? And then I remember the people that were still on the list were like, ha-ha. And then within about 7 days,
right.
if you were on that list, you were all of a sudden very annoyed. Mm-hmm. And if you were off the list, all of a sudden we celebrated because we were literally off work.
Right.
And I remember those who were happy started to get frustrated, and those that were frustrated started to get happy, and this weird transition started to happen, and we started to really take a look. And this is what I said yesterday. You know, we've been in this, and I can only speak for me. You know, I was born, went to school, you know, and then I just get in line with the rest of the ducks, right? You know, we just, okay, first grade, second grade, and it's this, which is, you know, I'm very appreciative of an education, but,
right.
you know, we go from school. And I'm watching this as with my 11th grader right now, but we go to school and then college and then we pick a career and then that's supposed to be what we want to love for the rest of our life and we get married and then we just grind through it. And COVID and the pandemic really kicked us out of line.
It flipped everything upside down.
Flipped the script. And I think...
And this is the chance we have now. Like, right? I look at it this way. This is when we need to stop. And this is how you and I started talking about this, right? Because it was this whole conversation about... Okay, what happens when we take our minds and we do this entire mind shift and you are looking at someone who is struggling, right? Or who had a different experience in COVID right. than you, right? Their business was allowed to stay open and you were upset because yours wasn't, right. but theirs was, and they're upset because theirs was.
Right. Well, and at first they were happy.
Right. But if we stop and we do that mind shift and we simply... are willing to listen to each other and say, okay, it's not what's wrong with you. I'm not, because if you ask that question, like, well, what's wrong with you? You were unhappy because you got to sit home.
Right.
You immediately get defensive. You immediately back yourself into a corner. But if you say, well, what happened? Well, I had to go. And then I had this experience. And then I had this. And then because I was a nurse and I had to watch multiple people pass away and I had to hold the phone for their fan. That's when we start to help each other through the trauma of this because it's becomes less about, well, you were selfish or I was selfish or this or you know, I carried more of a burden. And we just listen to the fact that every single one of us carried a burden that we didn't see coming that has been heavy as hell. And that we're still sort of finding our way back out of.
Yeah. Well, and I think we also put value into, I remember as a kid being, you know, if you asked me what I wanted to be, I would tell you I wanted to be a millionaire.
Well, yeah.
I mean, we put value into these, you know, these levels of financial stability, I guess. And absolutely. And if we can't reach it, we're like a failure. That's kind of how I've always felt. And this pandemic kind of broke that chain. Like, oh, maybe we should start putting value into like spending time with family or mm-hmm. we were able to step back and go, wow, I can't imagine how much of my life I spend at this helping this other, whether it's a company or your own business or something like that. And we put so much value into that. And, you know, as a 53-year-old adult driving a 10-year-old, no, it's a 10-year-old, a 10-year-old child driving a 53-year-old car, which is what I'm saying is I'm always a kid, right?
Right.
And I'm always, you know, all my problems have always been about inconvenience. Mm-hmm. You know, if I, my life is good unless I'm inconvenienced.
No.
And the pandemic created a lot of inconvenience and
absolutely
made us all step back. And, you know, I think our true selves came out.
I think one of the most interesting things I'm sort of grasping and grappling with through this is even prior to the pandemic, right?
Yeah.
Most of our generation started with this whole self-care initiative. Right? Mm. And it was self-care this and self-care that and take a bubble bath and da-da-da-da-da.
That was before.
Right. You know, and this was already starting to become like the hot topic of, you know, like we all need to learn self-care.
Is it self-care or capitalism?
Well, you know. And I sat through this really interesting workshop. And again, this is all pre-pandemic where the speaker just really hit me hard because she looked right at us and she said, self-care is not supposed to be an escape from your life.
Right.
It is supposed to be doing the hard things that make your life better. It is not Instagrammable.
Right.
If it's Instagrammable, then it's not actually self-care. It's simply just another
show. Self-serving.
Right. It's just another showcase.
Right.
Right. So then we go through the pandemic and blah, blah, blah. And as a supervisor and as somebody who manages staff that varies in ages, I find that I'm actually learning a lot from my staff that fall in that millennials and younger category. And here's why. I had this thought the other day because they're actually living what we've been preaching.
Hmm.
They came into their careers that way. Right? Instead right. of us. And I say that with full honesty that when I was, say, 25, 27 years old, if my boss had said to me, I need you to work this weekend, right?
Right.
Because we have a big project. Can you buckle down? Can you work Saturday and Sunday and get this done by Monday morning at 8 o'clock? I would have done cartwheels and seen that as the golden badge of honor.
The chance to really shine.
Right. Because we're the ladder climbers, right? That's success. Like you said, like we've got the checklist that we got to tick off. So I would have absolutely and worked 48 straight hours and not slept.
But is that because you were, is it because you wanted to shine or is it because there was you didn't want to fail?
Oh, we're all motivated by failure. And anyone who tells you otherwise because is I think lying.
But I think that, and that's kind of back to the beginning of what I was saying, is that's kind of the life we've been living, this almost this passive, aggressive mm-hmm. kind of lifestyle. And
it works,
mm-hmm. but it's not there's not a lot of serenity mm-hmm. in there.
No.
Whether, I don't know if that's good or bad, I don't know.
No.
But
no.
Yeah, exactly. And then when we had the pandemic, it kind of
right.
stopped all that.
Absolutely.
And now people are like quitting.
Yes. And I think people are shocked by that. But that's when we got to stop and we have to look backwards and say, okay, where is our balance?
Right.
Like we have been driving for so long that we're tired.
Right.
We're really tired.
Yeah.
And that's affected how we talk to each other, how we work together. I mean, I feel like, and again, this is just a personal opinion, but it speaks so loudly to our entire governmental political system right now.
Well, yeah.
I grew up in a household where, I mean, the running joke was, you know, my father was Republican, my mother was Democrat, and they went to vote just to cancel each other out.
Makes sense.
And I mean, and it was, you know, the running joke, but there was always open communication and there was always discussion. And we lost that somewhere. And I really feel like we lost that with years and years of everyone being so focused on hit that neck box, be that ladder climber, focus driven, don't look aside you, don't get to know the people around you. Your game is to beat. Your game is the race. And in any running race, how are you going to lose? You're going to lose if you look at your opponents on either side.
Right.
The only way you're going to win that running race is if your focus is on the finish line.
Right. Well, I won't ask you how old you are, but I'm guessing we're roughly halfway.
46.
Yeah, I'm 53. I don't know if it's something that's going on in our lives at a period in our lives where, you know, like, you know, at 53, like I used to feel like I was really driven and I was, you know, I was I would take on any project. Oh, yeah, you know, like a TV show. Like, I'm going to go out and clean the garage, and then I'm going to do this. Right. And then this pandemic hit, and, you know, I'm trying to paint a bathroom at our house now, and I'm just not finding the motivation. And right. I don't know if it's because I'm getting old or if it's because of the pandemic. I don't know what it is that's burned me out. But I'm struggling a bit, and I'm trying to find. This is the smallest bathroom too.
Right, that's exactly the point, right? So, yeah. The point is, we all are.
So it's important that we say it,
right? Exactly. It's important that we actually acknowledge it.
Yeah.
Because when we say it out loud, then this is how your and my discussion started the other day. It was like all of a sudden I had said something to Kim, and you heard me, and you said something to me, and we started this, and all three of us stood there, kind of looked at each other and went, oh, we're all feeling it.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's not just me.
Right.
Because I'm struggling with feeling like something's wrong with me.
Yeah.
Because whatever drive and gusto and, you know, organization and, you know, self-motivation I had prior to this pandemic, let me tell you, that bubble bopped. Is gone.
Yeah. Well, and I wonder if it's because we found out that we can still survive
with less
through something like that. Well, and, you know, it's a good point. You sort of kind of brought it up a minute ago, is that, you know, we really, I mean, it's all just based on how much stuff we get, right? Like, I don't know what you make. I don't know what I make. But, like, the more you make, the more stuff you get.
Yep.
The less I make, the less stuff I get. But here we are, you know, I mean, at this moment, whatever we make, our financial status doesn't matter because we're just two people talking. But, you know, I think early on, like kind of what I was saying is that we put so much value into these, you know, the millionaire, the car, you know, what do you want to, I want a Lamborghini, right? It's always this extravagant milestone. And if we don't make it, I know for me, you know, I'm like, you know, I'm all right, but I'm not a millionaire. Right. And it's like,
I left the corporate world like 15 years ago and decided to go get a master's in social work. I will never be a millionaire.
Well, right. And of course, but it's a dumb goal. And when you can't reach it, and then you have something like this pandemic that kind of comes along and puts us kind of, you know, I'm walking along. I remember when the pandemic first hit and I was out running on the trail and I'm running past, you know, high-level people in this town that are doing the exact same thing. It really equalized all of us as far as, like, emotionally and vulnerability, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, I mean, not only is it a dumb goal, it's a dangerous goal.
It's a dangerous goal.
Because it creates a world of they and them, okay? So when you are striving for success in this extremely limited definition, that in truth, most your everyday person is really, unless there's some tremendously lucky thing that happens to them in their lives, you're not going to get there because the odds are stacked against you.
Right.
Because those who are there, it's generational, and there's opportunity that comes along with that. But when we keep that as our definition of success, this teeny tiny world, we create they and them. And I hate those terms. And I say this to my kids all the time. Do not come home and, you know, complain to me about something and say, well, they said, if you can't give me names, do not generalize. Because the world of they and them is finger pointing.
Right.
So then I can't reach that goal because those people got in my way. Or it's because of them that I'm held back.
And it's sort of like projecting, right? I mean, I do another podcast called I'm Sorry About Last Night, but I do that a lot. I project and reflect. And whenever I'm projecting and reflecting, I'm not in the moment.
Right.
And like right now, right here, this very second, this is great, right? This is perfectly safe. I'm not concerned about my financial well-being. I'm not concerned about war. I'm not concerned about the pandemic.
Because, I mean, all that's in my head all the time.
At this moment, right now. Give me a second. I'll start stressing. But the point is that, you know, we're safe here. And I do think that, you know, if I was to say, oh, you're so lucky, you won $1 million. You're lucky. Is that luck or is that like a curse? Mm-hmm. You know, because I've said this before and I've heard it before. And I've been, well, you're not living. I love to say that I'm not living unless I'm suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been watching, you know, there was a documentary about this marathon called the Barclays, which is this 5 loops, 20 miles, all different directions, all times of the day, and it's just grind, and they're interviewing these guys, and it, usually it's like, you know, you're doing 5 loops of 20 miles, and you have 60 hours to do it, and these guys talking about how, you know, this is living. You know, this grind.
They're running?
This,
like, they're physically, like, running? They're,
well, they're walking,
cars?
They're running, they're crawling, they're rolling down the... I mean, it is...
Sounds like absolute torture to me.
It is torture. It is absolute torture. And, you know, there's the... You know, if you can make one loop on the thing, a lot of people come and you know, apply to run in the marathon just to only do a loop. Right. Just, like, right. I did the loop, I'm good. And then you have, there's people that come to just do the 3 loops, the fun run, they call it, which is 3, so it's 60
fun
miles.
Run.
And that's their goal. And then you have, at the end, out of like 60 people that get to be in this marathon, because it's really a special event, but out of like the 60, in the end, it's like 3 that are left, you know, on the last,
right,
the last loop. And, but it's always the theme, you know, this is, people are like, why do you do this? And he goes, this is living. You know, this is testing. Where can I, as a human, as a person, what am I capable of? Mm-hmm. You know, and it's not like to be a millionaire. Mm-hmm. It's like, can I get through the absolute hardest thing, mm-hmm, for me, at least, in the world to do right now? And that's their goal. And it isn't about making money.
No.
It's about testing our spirit.
And that, but I feel like that's what we need to start doing.
I agree.
And we need to start talking to each other honestly about it. And we need to start figuring out the difference between empathy and excuse. I want to know what happened. I want to know enough about you that I have some understanding.
So
I can empathize, but that's not going to excuse anyone from not still needing to live to their potential.
Yes.
I think that's where we are with this great resignation and what have you. It'll have to rebound at some point. And the balance is going to be found in, because what we're seeing right now is a whole ton of employers going out there with either, again, like, sort of, you know, as we continue to do, we go one direction or the other, but we can't seem to find that middle ground, right? So there's employers who are just angry and they're letting everybody go, or they're letting them walk out the door, and they're not going to change a thing about their policies or how they handle, you know, and they're not going to talk about it and they don't want to know, whatever. Then you've got the other guys who are so on the complete other end of the spectrum, and they're giving hiring bonuses, and if you stay for 3 weeks, I'll give you another bonus, and if you stay for 3 more weeks, I'll give you another bonus,
yeah,
you know, but they're not looking at the rest of their staff who stayed with them through the whole pandemic, who are like, hello,
right,
McFly.
Right.
And they're probably 3/4 people aren't going to get that reference, but that's fine.
I do. Back to the future.
There we go. So, you know, but the middle ground is, okay, how do we empathize? How do we look at what did we learn through this pandemic? Okay. One of the things we definitely learned was the rat race is, mm-hmm, not something that people are overly vested in anymore. Because
No. Those
of us who were vested, our generation, these last 2 years fried us.
Yeah.
Okay. The generations coming up behind us, like I said earlier, they already live what we've been sort of preaching, you know, as, you know, our motivational speeches, but then we never did any of it.
Yeah.
So the middle ground is, okay, what do we need to meet our needs and wants? How can we build this kind of employment structure, this kind of community, without saying to anyone that you are excused from participating? You know, like, because I see it all the time. I'm like, so this person didn't show up for 4 shifts of their job and they're still employed by you? Well, yeah, because I need them to stay, so I offered them a bonus. Huh? What?
Right.
No. No. No.
Well, it is and they said, you know, this country's been built on the back of poor white people. Well,
that's debatable.
Well, and the fact is that, you know, if I look at my son, who's 16, you know, 2 years ago, he got a job and he was making $7 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
17 and a half now, or actually, he started when he was 14 because they literally had nobody to work.
Right.
So at 14, he got a job down on the avenue and he was making $7 an hour. Today, he makes 15.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if those are poor white people or black people, but they're, you know, the amount of what we used to pay people compared to what we pay people now is a big, it's like 50% higher, 100% higher.
Yeah, but it hasn't matched with our cost of living increases at all.
Well, no, because cost of living and all the inflation went up as well. So, right, it doesn't really matter. But, right. You know, this was a move because out of straight panic. You know, I'm starting to see it, the change kind of shift back to the way it was. You know, I have a client that was just in yesterday. You know, a year ago, you know, they were opening up an outlet store here. And, you know, a year ago, it had been like, all right, let's try to figure out how we can do this today or yesterday or this past week. I mean, it's just shipping of boxes. Just basically, I mean, she resigned. She's like, I can't do this. I mean, 100 boxes one day, 50 boxes one day. She's like... And I was like, but 2 years ago, you'd have taken it on.
Right.
And now she's like, there's more to this life than me just emptying these outlet boxes. I mean, this is just ridiculous. So, you know, we're starting to pile it back on. And not everywhere, but I think we will end up reverting back to the way we sort of were, where we just take advantage of people.
I don't know. I mean, that breaks
if they allow it.
Right. And that breaks my heart because... You know, we have. We're generations and generations and generations and generations as a nation into a small group of people taking advantage of a much larger group of people who don't have the same bargaining skills, whatever they be at that level of our, you know, national economy and our nation building, right? So whether it was, you know, various different groups coming here or have, it's always been that way. It's always been the tiny sector at the top that, you know, holds the keys to the kingdom. And then the much larger sector at the bottom who has to build the kingdom.
Right. That's right.
And in the end, they don't own it. Somebody else still owns the keys.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I think everyone should try to own their own business. But it's, you know, it's tough.
It is.
It is tough. You know, we live at Disneyland here at the beach. You know, we don't see, or I don't think we have seen, you know, what the rest of this country is really going through because, you know, we're a destination. You know, we're where people seek out to come here. Yep. So we can get away with, you know, I mean, we're not going to go different places and spend this kind of money when you come and visit a town, right? But this is what, like, when you go to Disney, you're like, oh, we're, or like Firefly. Firefly is a great example. You know, you go to Firefly, you spend $8 on a lemonade. You're like, God damn, I love this $8 lemonade. But you know, because it's an event, right? You know, it's what's going to be.
Short term.
But that's how our whole town is.
Oh, yeah.
It's an $8 lemonade.
Oh, yeah.
And it's because people come here. And, you know, through this whole thing, I mean, there was that 6 weeks in March, right, where it was like a ghost town. I mean, it was kind of weird. And it was kind of a state of emergency. And, you know, you shouldn't really be out on the road. And it was very strange. And I have to admit, part of me was like, I kind of like this. You know, this nobody's here in our town. It felt quietly, you know. I root for the town. But at the moment, I was like, yeah, this feels kind of...
I am not going to lie. For the last 2 summers, you know, Route 1 has been lovely.
I don't know what route one's been on. Route 1's been a nightmare. And now we seem to be having like a northbound traffic issue.
Yes.
But it's all positive, you know. But I just remember like this weird kind of change that was going on. And then, you know, slowly coming back. But we haven't really skipped a beat.
No.
I mean, compared to some towns. But I think we are going to start seeing the struggle. And, you know, that's...
I absolutely do. Because I think people are exhausted.
Yeah.
And I mean, we're going... It's so hard when you use that term, right? So you say you look at someone and you just say, I'm tired.
Right.
And they look at you and go, oh, take a nap. I'm like, no, that's not what I mean.
Right.
Like, I'm physically emotionally, spiritually tired. I have been fighting internal demons, external demons, societal demons for 2 years now, and simultaneously being asked to just keep functioning, just keep functioning, and that is exhausting.
So how do we find, I mean, I guess the real question is, what are we tired of? Like, is it the fight, right? Is it the fight to stay, you know, in the game so that, I guess, more stuff, right? I mean, we're always trying to get stuff. It's about cars and houses.
But I think this is the whole crux of where our conversation even started and brought us to this, right? What we're really tired of is pretending we're okay.
Well, that sounds about right.
We're really tired of the mask. We're really tired of not admitting to each other that it's hard, that we have to be forever strong, infallible, no show no weakness.
Right.
And that's what we're tired of.
Well, and I think I was also tired a little bit of the hypocrisy of a lot of it. And, you know, you mentioned masks, you know, the weirdness of that. You know, the reality is that, you know, masks aren't, they're spit shields. I mean, that's really what they ended up being, which is, you know, it's important. We don't want to spit on people, but they're not filtering anything. But you can't say anything. So I think it's really about feeling like you know something, but knowing you can't say anything about it. So I think keeping that in, and then every once in a while it would come out, and I think we started seeing some people that really started to kind of lose their shit over it. But that battle, and I guess I'm speaking for me, so it was, you know, work, and then the masks and stuff, and then, you know, the way that our kids, the life that our kids are going through, you know. My son, my 16-year-old, is nowhere near the world that I was at 16. I was under my mother's wing. Everything I did, you know, I mean, maybe not as much at 16, but still being babied, being taken care of, being coddled. My parents were very, you know, when it came to like homework, you know, it's all get together. We sit down. We get it all done.
Yep.
And then send me off out the door like I'm actually very smart, when in reality they had to help me with my homework. And it was all kind of like this weird, not a lie, but not really prepping me very well, I didn't think. No, and no offense to them, because they're just people. Just right. People being people. But
they, I mean, they did what they thought they were supposed to do.
Yeah. And today, you know, my 16-year-old is like, I get a call yesterday or 2 days ago. It's like, SAT prep starts next, or we're doing SAT prep. Your son will be taking the SATs on Wednesday. He will need a calculator, and he will need this, and this is the time. And if this was, you know, when I was 16, it would have been a whole production.
Oh, it would have been on my mother's calendar for 3 months.
Oh, my God.
Like,
so,
we would have had daily reminders of it. Oh, yeah.
And so I tell him yesterday, I go, so, yeah, the school called and reminded you of the SATs on Wednesday. He's like, yeah. And I go, you're going to need a calculator. He's like, right. Everything that I told him,
you already know.
I felt like an idiot, right? Like, yeah, I mean, I'm going to take them. Like, they've been doing studying. I mean, right. After school, it's been a whole thing. And I've been out of it.
Yeah.
I'm not out of it. I mean, I've just been, you know, working. But this 2 years, he's become almost like a young adult.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah, it's awesome. But I'm kind of left going, what do I do? I'll make your breakfast. I'll get your lunch. I make the best damn sandwich for him. And this is all my love, all me as a mature adult into this one sandwich. You know, this.
I still know how to do this.
Yes. I'm like, I made it extra great for you today, you know? And so, you know, I think there's a lot of stuff that has come through this that I think is for the better.
I do. And I really mean that. But we're not going to make it better unless we're willing to look at both ends of that. Like, because there is a lot of great that can come out of this. There is this shift that where we realized, hey, you know what? You don't have to sit at your desk in an office from 9 to 5 Monday through Friday to do your job.
Right.
In fact, and that opened so many doors. For people with disabilities, for mothers, right? Because the amount of flexibility I have now. Now, I've got an 11-year-old and a 13-year-old. Like you said, they don't need me as much as they used to. Right. I'm coming to terms with that.
Do you feel the shift over the last 2 years?
Oh, gosh, yes. Oh, gosh, yes. Especially the last 2 years, because they were asked to rise up in ways as well. Like, they had to flip overnight and learn how to do their entire academic life online.
Yeah.
On an iPad that they'd never held in their hands before.
Yeah.
You know, they
and we had to kind of get out of the way.
Right. You know, they had to learn to balance their schedules and mine, because I was still working full time.
Right.
They were doing their remote schooling, and the three of us had to figure out, okay, I'll set up my desk in the kitchen. You put your desk in your room. You put your desk in the basement. That way we'll put some Wi-Fi extenders. You know, everybody can be online.
We just built a school.
Exactly. You know, like, we got this. You know, after the first couple times when I'm in the middle of a Zoom meeting and, you know, I have like legislators up on the screen and the dog comes running through the kitchen and then, you know, my son is playing, you know, some video game and we hear him yelling upstairs and I'm like,
we definitely saw some funny, I think that happened to, I mean, whether it was on the news or in sports, you know, we'd see these, you know, these talking heads and then all of a sudden their kid's like, hi, daddy. You're like, yep. Jesus, I am professional.
But the interesting thing for me that what came out of that is I started to really carefully look at, because the really big trend in the beginning, especially in the beginning of the pandemic, for those of us that had like sort of office-based jobs that were working from home, was everyone wanted to be in meetings, in Zoom meetings all day.
Yeah.
Because it was, and I get it, it was a verification that you were doing your job, quote unquote, right? Because if people could see you, you were doing something.
Mm-hmm.
So you would just get booked into back to back from 8:30 in the morning to 5:30 at night. Boom, boom, boom. We wouldn't work that way in the office.
Right.
So it was like, what are we doing? Right. Like, when am I supposed to actually do any of the work that goes along with my job?
Yeah, when do I get my moment, like, where I kind of hide from everybody?
Right, like this is all about just sort of checking in and seeing other people. So as I realized, okay, I got to balance this with my kids being online for school, and yeah, thank you, Comcast, but the three of us cannot be Zooming at the same time because then the whole thing crashes, so there's no Zoom there.
Right.
And I started to look at the meetings and be like, okay, what's my hourly rate? All right. What's the question being addressed in this meeting? Do I have enough to contribute to this meeting that I should be charging my company my hourly rate for being there? Or are my skills better somewhere else?
Right.
And it became less about attendance for me and being seen and deliverables. Like, okay. So then what happens is, cool. If I need to do this, say, grant proposal, but the best time for me to do it is between 3 a.m. and 5 a.m., who cares?
Yeah.
Did I get it done? Did we get it? Okay. That kind of flexibility.
So do you think that would be an issue, though? Do you think that was starting to become... Do you think we're starting to see that more, a broader view of that, where people are like, listen, my time's better doing something else.
Mm-hmm.
And started to really question the chain of authority.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. Because I think that was what this lady was talking about yesterday. She was like, yeah, I was doing this. And then all of a sudden my assistant manager was feeling like she had a better idea. Then she's addressing it with my other manager. And then it was like this whole... Like, that would have never happened 2 years ago. You just were, if you're an assistant, you just did your job.
You did what you were told.
And now everybody has a voice.
You celebrated when you were asked to work overtime on the weekend. Whereas now, I did have to ask one of my coworkers to buckle down for a project because it got thrown at us last minute. And I was like, your lead on this, can you get this done over the weekend? And she said, absolutely. She was like, and then I can put in for 2 days of comp time. And for a hot second, I was like, what? Oh, right. She's right. She's absolutely right.
Well, like, that's a great point.
And that's that difference of, we've been preaching self-care. We've been preaching understanding of each other for so long, but we haven't done it. And now as we're coming out of this pandemic health-wise, shall we say, right? Because we're really not out of it at all. The next 5 to 10 years are going to be another health pandemic, and it's going to be us finding ways to overcome and heal all of the impacts of 2 solid years of toxic stress.
I've been reading this book called The Fourth Turning. Have you heard of the book? It's it was written like in the 70s. But it talks about these sequences of time, these sequences of whatever the word is, but these chunks of time, right? And, you know, it usually starts after like the end of a war. Mm-hmm. So right now we're kind of in this, that's called the crisis, the last 20 years of this 80-year, basically I guess they give us about 80 years as a lifespan. And this last 20 years is called the crisis, and it happens, you know, and then we have, you know, the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, the World War One, World War Two, and this 80 years is kind of at the end of World War Two, and the beginning was the recovery, right, the celebration, and then we kind of grind through it, and then 80 years later, we're in a crisis, and that's kind of where we're at right now. Yep. It's not kind of, it's exactly where we're at right now, and they talk in this book that our saving grace is going to be the millennials, and I was like, because if you know, prior to this, you'd say, oh, the millennials are, you know, flaky or flighty or lazy. I don't know.
Well, the millennials were challenging everything that the generations before them bought into as self-identity.
Well, and that's
so when somebody stands in front of you and is suddenly like, everything you believe is wrong.
Right.
But here's the interesting part about them. It's what we taught them.
Well, and they're also like, you know, if I sat down, like, or you sat down with your parents, you know, my dad would go into the story of how when he was 9, right, or 7, how he would sweep the church and he would go pick crabs and then pick blueberries and then, you know, work at the movies and all these, this hard, grindy life. And, you know, he shares that with me and then I share that story about my dad. But this next generation, they're not going to, that's not going to be the story. You know, and that's, those will be the millennials. They're not, they're like, and it talks about, they're, what's going to save us is the art, you know, the humility, you know, maybe more, you know, more about less passive aggressive, grindy at work and the artist. And I do think we're starting to see some of that, you know, whether it's in tech, you know, the meta, you know, we're going to start seeing these, you know, there's this huge industry that's popping up now of online stuff, right? Like, oh, you can buy a Meta. You can go in the Meta. You can have a piece of property. Hey, who's going to build your Meta house? Oh, well, I got this 12-year-old kid that is awesome.
Oh, don't worry. He lives in my house.
Right. And they're going to build you this amazing house for your Meta. And they're really the only one that's going to be able to do it.
Yep.
And this is this transition that we're going through. And picking blueberries and picking crabs and sweeping out the church as a 10-year-old stories are going to go away. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be the disconnect, right? And me and you pass on that kind of that reminder, but our kids aren't going to. And this is going to be, I think, because my parents' history and their history with their parents is, and if we continue like that, it's just grinding work until you die, basically.
Right. But they were also the generation that came with pensions.
Right.
So
and healthcare.
So you were grinding to get to a retirement where you actually could and you could afford to
live. Right.
We don't have that.
Mm-mm. Nope.
I mean, unless you know, and I'm sure there are plenty of people who are brilliant enough in your 20s when you first started your career to be like, yes, I'm going to take, you know, one paycheck a month and put it in this IRA. I'll tell you, the majority of my friends did not get that memo. No. We got the memo of, you know, churn and burn. We worked a party on the weekends.
Right. Like, churn and burn. I love it.
You know, like it was like, whew, there's a reason for grinding. We'll get ahead eventually. But, you know, we've got some spending money now. It's savings? What? You know, and I think most of us wised up in our 30s, but we don't have that same, I don't want to call it safety net because it's not. Like, they earned it because that was how the system was set up for them. But that is also what they tried to push us to drive for without recognizing the benefit at the end that they were working towards. We don't have.
No.
It went away.
Well, and I had a guy yesterday, he's retired, and he doesn't have anything to do.
Yeah.
He's literally, I think it might be awful to come basically out of a pandemic and then retire because, you know, he's got nothing to do. And he's, you know, he'll probably end up picking up a job, you know, because just to do something.
Well, this is what my brothers and I tease my father all the time. He has now retired four times from, you know, because he retired from industry A and then went and got bored after a couple months and started another career. And then was like, all right, I'm done with this and retired from that. And okay, and then started another one. My mother moved him down here to the beach and he started another one. And now we have to keep him off of HOA boards because that's his new thing. But there's also that. There's also when you grind forever and that's your identity, when you're not grinding, you have no idea who you are.
Well, my dad was a colonel.
Oh, boy.
So, and he's retired. And I literally have to, and he's 84. He's going to be 85 this year. And he's doing so well. But I need to, you know, he comes over 3 days a week. You know, I need to have him come over. And we didn't even talk about it, but my mom passed during this pandemic. And she passed alone in a nursing home by herself. Literally couldn't see her. And then after she died, they're like, you can come visit her now. I was like, that is lame. But point is that, you know, now my dad's alone and he's, and you know, but he is a retired colonel, right? That's his whole
identity.
His whole lifestyle. And I think there's a lot of people out there like that. And I think they have trouble with how life is today because, you know, my dad's an awesome guy. He's very educated, super smart. But he's not inventing anything, right? He comes from that world of like, mm-hmm. Ten Hut, come in the world, you know, this, right. You're signed up. And we were basically going to decide what you're going to do for the next 28 years. And so when he comes out of that, his whole thing is like decisions, problem solving. But you know, this whole war stuff going on, you know, I have to have him come over and debrief soldier, you know, let's let's see what all the shit you collected up in your head for the last 2 days and let's go through it because he will, you know, grind himself into insanity.
Do you recognize that you're already doing what I was saying? That for your dad, you're bringing him over three times a week and you're not saying what's wrong with you, dad, that you're so worked up. Okay, dad, what happened in the last couple of days?
Yeah. Well, I might say the other thing, too.
Yes.
Dad.
And we can do that a little bit within families. Right. But the motivation behind your action is recognizing the importance of, okay, Dad, what happened?
Well, it's listening.
Right.
And I think it's, you know, I've in the past, you know, I've had trouble being a listener because I didn't really fit in. So I always had my solution was to turn it around and make it about myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you said, oh, my gosh, I just bought these new shoes and they're, you know, they're killing my feet. I bought those shoes and they were killing my feet.
Yep.
You know, it's like I didn't know how to listen.
Right.
And I think, you know, I think we're learning. So many things have come out of this. And I think that's one of them is having to listen and, you know, hold off on judgment.
Right.
Right. And even maybe not even judge at all, or at least vocally or at least out loud, because, you know, sometimes it's better. I don't say it, and it's better to just listen.
How about we normalize for people and make it a much more popular thought process that it's okay, in fact, it proves your intelligence for you to have a conversation with someone, listen to them, and respond by saying, I don't really know enough to have an opinion of my own on that subject yet.
Right.
Rather than what we see all the time, which is this right back at you because I know, you know, this teeny tiny bit, so I'm going to expand on that for the next 20 minutes, but I'm going to yell at you while I'm doing it.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, it's okay to not know.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Well, but that would require no comment, right? And people love, you know, we like to get into it. I also feel like we've sort of lowered our standards a little bit. I don't know if it's been the last couple of years or it's just a slow grind, but, you know, people are wanting to be recognized for doing, you know, normal shit. You know, like, hey, I work. Yeah, you should work. You know, let's remember that. You know, you're not doing anything special. But now, you know, after the whole thing, it's people are feeling that I've worked the whole time. You know, or, you know, whatever it is. And, you know, it's like, yeah, okay, well, You know, that's great, right. But that's what we do. You know, but we want to start. Like, I don't steal or do drugs. Oh, you're amazing. Let's raise you on our shoulders and carry you around the town. But this is what we're supposed to be doing in the first place.
Right.
It is. And listening is tough because we all have an opinion. And, you know, when that when you're listening, you're refraining, right? You're refraining from opinion, giving your own opinion or making it about something else. And some people just, it's tough. There's an art to listening.
Listening is a skill that requires practice, too. It really does. Because, I mean, I know I have to practice this all the time. I will try very, 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 very hard to listen with the perspective. And I'm almost repeating it to myself in my head as the other person is talking. Like, you are listening to hear, not to respond. You are listening to hear, not to respond. Like, you're just listening. Laura, just listen.
Right.
Just listen. Focus. Focus. Come on, mice. Get in line. More than that, though, there's tremendous power if we're able to sit there and listen and not only not verbally respond, but if you can train your body so that you're listening in a way that you're not nodding along when you agree or rolling your eyes when you don't or getting fidgety when it's uncomfortable. If you're just listening. And you would not believe how hard that skill is. Like how much you have to practice that because it is our intrinsic nature to respond.
I'm trying not to.
Right. But you see how you have, like, I have
well,
to
I do
tell
that
myself.
Too. I go, yeah, right. Right. Yes. And I'm trying to not.
But even if it's, you know, and sometimes it is a matter of engagement. Sometimes it's a matter of respect, right? So as you're listening to somebody, you want them to know that you're listening. So you do that, like you confirm for the person speaking to you that I'm respecting you and I'm listening to you because I'm nodding along with what you say. But if you're nodding along with what they say, are you really listening?
Well, don't I think we all try
to... Or are you in your own head going, yep, I agree, yep.
Well,
I agree.
Are we always also trying to fix your problem?
Yep.
Like when you start talking to me, mm-hmm. And this happens with my father. If I'm, and I have, as a just another human, right, I have to remind myself, if you include your father in this conversation, you will be opening up a whole can of
Whoop ass,
right? Like, do I want to do that to him, right? Is this something that's of value or going to benefit him at all? Because he will mm-hmm. fix it.
Right.
You know, he's like, okay. I just did that. I made the mistake, and I was painting a bathroom in our house, and it has this weird boarding, and I was like, and I call him, I'm like, hey, I think I could use that Kills on that? He's like, oh, well, hold on now, let me bring it up. You know, he's like, it's a whole Operation Arcano just went into effect. And and I was like, damn it, I shouldn't have done that. You know, because now he's like, he's all, well, call me, keep me posted.
Yep.
So now, but he's also like, doesn't have a lot going on. So, you know, I try to keep him involved. But I do think we all want to fix everybody.
Yes.
And I remember my buddy Matt was like, you know, he taught me a lot. Did you know Matt Haley?
Unfortunately, I moved here shortly after he
passed. Oh.
So I have heard remarkable things about
him. He was an amazing pain in the ass, right? He was an amazing guy, but, you know, I'm sure people would tell you he's a pain in the ass. And he was a pain in the ass because he was that guy that taught me a lot of stuff. And I remember he's like, hey, man, can you stop by or something I did? And he was going through some stuff, and I remember him just sharing. And then I started to fix him, right? Mm-hmm. And he looked at me and he goes, I didn't ask you to come over to fix me. I asked you to come over to listen. Mm-hmm. And I remember I felt about an inch tall. And I'm not sure if that was the exact words, but the point was, shut up. I need to talk.
Right. I just need to be heard.
And I remember thinking, oh, my gosh. And so now I try to do that. Mm-hmm. Not perfectly, because I think it's just this natural instinct to want to fix people. But sometimes I just listen, mm-hmm. right? And then sit there in the silence.
You know, that's the biggest shift in parenting that I've done that has made a huge difference in my relationship with my kids. When they come to me with something, you know, like some struggle, they want to talk about some problem, the first question I ask is, okay, cool, before we get into this, are you looking for a solution or you just need to get something off your chest?
Right.
9 times out of 10, I just need to get something off
my chest.
10 out of 10. Right. And I'm like, okay, cool. Right. I got my directive. And then I just listen.
Now, can you do that?
Work it out on there. And it does. It applies.
But do you do that now without the whole, all right, are we listening or are we solution? I mean, do you, because you don't want to be.
Yeah. I mean, we've gotten to the point where, you know.
That could be obnoxious too, right?
Exactly. We've gotten to the point where one they time. Sort of understand it.
Right.
So when they start talking now, they'll introduce it and say, Mom, there's something I want to tell you. Or, hey, Mom, I need your help. With
there
this.
You go.
And right. And those two things, you know, those verbal cues now, because we sort of set the stage, let me know, okay, where are we in this one? Like, where are we? Where do I step in? Where do you want my help? And then I started doing it with, like, friends.
Like, right.
Are you good? Like, because I also realized a lot of times where people wanted me to just hear them, being me, being the ladder climber, being the, you know, the social worker, like I went into like autopilot instantaneously and I was like, I will fix all the things.
Right.
What do we need to do? You know, but at the mercy of my own life, because it was so much easier for me actually to focus on whatever was wrong in their lives or whatever challenge they were having and Kobe, the hero over there. Then balance my checkbook because that was boring.
Right. Well, and it's kind of, what does it say about us? Right? You know, if you're that person, if I'm that person, you know, that needs to do that, what is that? Am I trying to create value in myself? Am I trying to.
It says we're the generation of ladder climbers.
Yeah, ladder climbers.
Like, we're still the box checking. We were told to do this. We were told to do this, you know? I mean, I remember having this complete meltdown after college because I was, and I said something similar to my friends at the time. I'm like, I did everything I was told to do. I got good grades in school. I got, you know, I got into a good college. I got good grades in college. I graduated with honors. I got a good job. And I was like 25. I'm like, what the hell do I do now?
Right.
Like, there's no more. What's the next box?
Right. We're good when we have a task.
Right.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, like, there was no map. Like, the map had been very, very clear for so long. And then we became the next round, right? Like we talked about. We have driven our careers with what we want to give ourselves credit for as this self-drive, this passion, this self, you know, self-sufficiency, right? For our entire careers. Or look back. So I know, started my career. Then we had the dot-com boom. And right, exactly. And I watched 3/4 of the people I work with lose their jobs within 48 hours. Walking out of the building, you know, I mean, again, I'm in my 20s, years of career service, going home to their families to explain they don't have a job anymore, crying. And somehow I survived that.
Yeah.
I don't know how. I don't know why I got lucky. And I put my head down and I just kept working.
What year was that? Was it dot-com? Do we know?
God, that had to have been.
98?
Yeah. 97, 98. Something around 98, 99, right? Yeah. Then 9/11 hit, right? And I remember running out of the building, running through the streets, not knowing what was going on, not knowing if I was.
Were you in New York then?
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, not, you know, whatever. Somehow jumped on a boat, made it out. Okay, cool. I was back at my desk 3 days later. And I just kept working like nothing was gone. And it's just, and it's been this over and over and over and over again, whether it was, you know, the pandemic that hit, whether it was, you know, the storming of the Capitol. Like, come on. The Capitol of our nation got stormed, and almost every single one of us still worked a normal work day. Like, how American is that?
Right.
We just put our heads down, and we kept chugging along like nothing was going on. And we've kept doing that. And so what I really want us to recognize as we learned some lessons in this pandemic and we are coming out of it is no. What we've defined as self-drive and passion and career motivated is actually hiding. it's actually like a trauma response. Like, we have simply just been like, oh my God, not me. Put your head down. Just keep rowing. Just keep rowing.
Right.
For so long that's where the burnout comes in. It wasn't just the last 2 years. It was the last 20.
Makes sense. I mean, it absolutely makes sense. And I think that's what we're all kind of scratching our head going, what the hell has gone on? And the difference, I guess, is do we slowly slide back into status quo like we've always done, or are things going to start changing? Or should they change? Is that what we should do? Should we just be grinding and working and dying?
Right. And I guess feel like that's where I'm, and I don't know, like that's where my friends are, that's what we seem to be talking about a lot, is that position I strove for 2 years ago, that willingness to work, you know, 12-hour days, put it in because I was going to get to that level, like it's gone.
Well, and I think we also have to be accountable to ourselves, right? We have to, like, if I don't want to be part of that because I don't agree,
right,
then that's fine. But I also have to, let's say, that means I may have to downsize my house.
Yep.
Or I may be, you know, and we heard a little bit of this early on in the pandemic. I heard, you know, we'd sold one of our cars. My wife, her husband's going to be now stay home with the kids.
Right.
We're going to be a one-income family. And we're just going to shrink down all of our requirements to survive, and we're going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to be accountable and decide what it is you want and what you can't not work and still want a lot of stuff.
Right.
So you have to take an honest look at what it is, where you've gotten to,
mm-hmm.
What it is that you want, and what can you do without.
Right.
And, you know.
I mean, because our definition of middle class, right, has just, it's pretty warped. I mean,
there is no middle. Credit cards allow a middle class.
But it's really, like, and I say it this way, right? So my grandparents were definitely middle class. Queen, you know, had a house in Queens, post-World War II, like, soldiers' housing, whatever. And my grandfather worked full-time, and my grandmother worked somewhat here and there, but, you know, she raised the three kids. And they put their kids, you know, in Catholic school, and all three kids went to college. Okay. They never went to Disney World. They owned one car.
Well, they may not have had Disney World.
Well, true that. There is no way on this earth my grandmother would have ever owned a brand name pocketbook.
Sure.
Listen, but that's status quo in the middle right. class. Like there was this shift for material things that was never part of the middle class lifestyle that almost destroyed the middle class because, as you said, put it all on credit.
Well, maybe that's what got us here, is always about trying to provide for the middle class. Mm-hmm. You know, because the upper class, right?
Right.
Always seems to have stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then the very, very bottom clearly don't. It's this middle class that's always striving
right.
to be above their class.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're making products that used to only be available to the upper class through capitalism and, you know, manufacturing and, you know, cheap labor, these things. I mean, that whole desire to be out of the middle class is kind of what has gotten us to this place.
Right.
You know, because, you know, middle class, I mean, as a kid growing up in the 70s and 80s, you know, we didn't go out to dinner.
No.
And my mom, I always remember my mom cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while, we might go to this restaurant, El Pino's, which was this amazing Mexican restaurant, but very rare, always cooked at home. There was never, you know, like last night, my kid's like, go to Wawa and get us some snacks. I'm like, I go to Wawa, I drop $10
mm-hmm.
and junk. You know, that was never going on. But the middle class, you know, my dad was like, never get a credit card unless you really have to and only if you can pay for it. You know, and it was always never get a credit card, never get a credit card. It was this thing he always used mm-hmm. to burn into my head. And now today, and I even went through this with the pandemic because, you know, I spent those last couple of years really focusing on paying off credit cards.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't have a lot. And I didn't really I wasn't
my biggest source of pride for those last 2 years. I am. Other than my mortgage, I am 100% debt free.
Yeah, me too. But, you know, but a lot of people want to be part of that middle class. Actually, a lot of people want to be part of that upper class,
mm-hmm.
and credit cards have allowed it. And I think it's the pandemic hit, we all kind of looked at our credit card bills and said, oh, my God, what am I doing? So we're having to, you know.
And our, I mean, we could talk for hours on our credit system because that's a whole mess, too. That's a whole mess.
It's a mess if you can't control yourself.
Well, but so much of your opportunities in life are based on your credit score, which you can only have a credit score if you have a credit card.
Right. Oh, my God. Yeah. It's a racket. My wife, she's so funny.
So it's one
funny.
Of those, like, so... Because one of the things...
And there's
I actually,
a status like, about having a credit
right,
card.
But it's actually one of the things I have to work on right now because, like I said, I worked really hard through the pandemic, paid off everything, eliminated everything, closed everything. Okay? And then I looked. Now, I am fiscally stable. I have just my mortgage. No credit card debt. No car loan. Da-da-da. Okay. This sounds good, right?
Yeah.
Like, big picture-wise, this sounds good. My credit score, like, dropped.
Right.
And they were like, well, because we don't have anything to rate you on. Right.
Like, that's that weird right. passive-aggressive thing
so,
that hangs
you know,
over all
I
of
go
our head.
And I go back to the bank, and I'm like, all right, here's the deal. Give me a credit card. Cool. Got that. Cool. Then I know, okay, I got all these, you know, whatever. Got the cable bill every month. The statics, right? You got the cable bill, the cell phone bill. I've got the electric bill. I'm going to pay those anyway. Put all those on that credit card. They go there every month. They're already in my budget. Then credit card bill comes at the end of the month. Pay it off every month. All, boom. Within 2 months, I'm back up. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. It's absolute, all I've done is add a middleman here.
Well, my wife just went through this. Because I guess as a young person, she didn't treat her credit with respect. And so she's like, I want to get this credit karma. And all I have to do is do this. And then I get a higher credit score. And I'm like, we don't even need a credit card. What are you doing this for? I mean, we're good. Why? This is for people that are, unfortunately, in a pinch, right? Mm-hmm. Unless you're just balling, I suppose. But, you know, this is for
what
when you
does that
you're,
feel like?
Yeah, I've never balled. Well, listen, we could talk all day. That was an hour, and that was awesome. Yeah. Would you come back?
Absolutely.
This is good shit.
It was. It was a really good talk.
Well, I appreciate it. Anything you want to promote or...
I'm not good really. For now. I'm good for now.
I appreciate it.
Listen, I want to promote everybody being kind to each other, taking a moment today if you are listening to someone to truly listen to them and to frame your mindset in everything you do with a willingness to ask the person in front of you, not what's wrong with you, but what happened.
Yeah. And take that time to listen.
Yep.
I love it. Uh-oh. Shit, someone's calling. All right. We'll catch you later. Bye.
Bye-bye.